Today, property signs for the 21st of June 2021. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, working latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, the question is, who's really calling the housing lending shots? We look at more government meddling in the housing market as the first home deposit schemes are tweaked. And in New Zealand, there's a fight going on about whether debt-to-income targets should be imposed by the Reserve Bank. And as is so often the case, politics, it appears, wins at the expense of good sense. But then, of course, politics are very nicely aligned to the interests of the big banks. The Treasury has just expanded the property price caps for homes purchased under the First Home Loan Deposit Scheme and the Family Home Guarantee. The federal government has confirmed that the new property price caps for the First Home Loan Deposit Scheme, the FHLDS, and the Family Home Guarantee apply from the 1st of July 2021. A total of 30,000 places will be made available under the First Home Loan Deposit Scheme range of schemes in the new financial year. And as at the 1st of July, 10,000 additional places will be available for the 21-22 financial year under each of the FHLDs, the New Home Guarantee, and the Family Home Guarantee initiatives. Both the FHLDS and the Family Home Guarantee will operate under new and increased property price caps. The move comes following criticism that the caps were too low in some cities, particularly given that the average house price in New South Wales has now surpassed $1 million for the first time, thanks, of course, to poor policy. Speaking about the new caps, Assistant Treasurer and Minister for Housing Michael Sukkar commented that the new caps would, quote, ensure that people could continue to purchase a home as well as accommodate large families under the Family Home Guarantee. The capital city price thresholds apply to regional centres with a population over 250,000, recognising that dwellings in regional centres can be more expensive than other regional centres. Those regional centres include Newcastle and Lake Macquarie, the Illawarra around Wollongong, Geelong, the Gold Coast and the Sunshine Coast. The FHLDS New Homes Scheme, also known as the New Homes Guarantee, which was launched last year, will be expanded for a second year, providing an additional 10,000 places in 21-22, and it will provide an additional 10,000 places for first home buyers seeking to build a new home or purchase a newly built dwelling with a deposit of 5% and a construction commencement time frame of 12 months. The New Home Guarantee will now have a construction commencement time frame of 12 months, and its price caps remain the same. Speaking ahead of the release of the additional 30,000 places under the various schemes from 1st of July, Sukkar commented, "The First Home Loan Deposit Scheme has been the landmark success of the Morrison government since its commencement in 2020. 30,000 first home buyers have been supported into home ownership through First Home Loan Deposit Scheme and New Home Guarantee already. We know how difficult it can be to buy a new home or re-enter the housing market, and that saving for a deposit is the hardest part of getting into home ownership. That's why the Morrison government has established the New Family Home Guarantee, which recognises the challenge of saving for a deposit is much more difficult when you are a single parent with children. By supporting single parents and their children, we are helping them achieve the security and dignity that home ownership provides," Sukkar said. "Through our First Home Loan Deposit Scheme and the New Home Guarantee Program, the Morrison government is helping more first home buyers and single parent families overcome the challenges of saving for deposit and realising the Australian dream of owning your own home. With 30,000 new places available from 1 July, now is the time for potential applicants to contact a participating bank or mortgage provider and get their applications underway." So banks, here we are again. more support from the government. Isn't that nice? Elsewhere, the Federal Treasurer has granted approval for a non-major bank to hold a controlling stake of 100% in Members Equity Bank Limited. Back in February, Bank of Queensland announced that it had entered into an agreement to acquire 100% of the issued share capital in ME Bank for a cash consideration of $1.325 billion payable on completion. The acquisition was subject to regulatory approval from the Treasurer, but that has now been granted and the deal will take effect in the coming days and is expected to complete on the 1st of July 2021. Prior to completion, the Bank of Queensland and ME Bank will continue to operate as separate businesses with no immediate changes expected for customers of either business. When ME Bank becomes part of Bank of Queensland Group, it's expected that it will continue to operate with its own, quote, well-recognised brand and Australian-based customer service team. The Bank of Queensland Group Chairman, Patrick Allaway, said the acquisition of ME Bank is a key step in our strategy to be a compelling alternative to the big banks. It is a defining moment in the transformation of BOQ Group, which will benefit our shareholders, customers and people. And BOQ Group Managing Director and CEO Jort Fraser said the addition of ME Bank to the BOQ Group will further strengthen our multi-brand strategy, deliver material scale, broadly double the size of our retail bank and provide us with geographic diversification. We look forward to the ME Bank team formally joining the BOQ Group very soon. Adam Crane, the CEO of ME Bank, commented, on a day-to-day basis, it is business as usual for ME customers. There will be no change to customers' accounts or arrangements, nor the way they normally interact with ME Bank. Being part of the BOQ Group will help us deliver on our promise of helping all Australians get ahead. As homegrown banks, BOQ and ME are a natural fit, culturally aligned, and offer a genuine alternative to the big banks. Importantly, we share common values and a customer-first ethos. As ME becomes WE, the team looks forward to continuing to support and service our customers and offering the simple and straightforward banking products that they want. On the basis that completion occurs on 1 July 21, BOQ's financial year 21 results will incorporate earnings from ME Bank for the period 1 July to the 31st of August, and BOQ's current market guidance communicated with the first half 21 financial results excludes the impact of these earnings. Now, over in New Zealand, last week, the Reserve Bank there said that they had agreed with the Minister of Finance to update their shared memorandum of understanding, the MOU, on macroprudential policy and add debt serviceability restrictions to the list of potential tools they have available. Back in February, the Minister of Finance issued a formal direction to the Reserve Bank to have regard to house price sustainability when making financial stability decisions, and that's separate from the Monetary Policy Committee's monetary policy remit. The Minister also requested more information and analysis on debt-to-income ratios and interest-only mortgages. The bank provided this advice to the Minister last month, and they've now made it public. The bank's analysis detailed that debt serviceability restrictions, such as debt-to-income, the DTI limit, are likely to be the most effective additional tool that could be deployed by the Reserve Bank to support financial stability and house price sustainability. The analysis also demonstrated that any such restrictions would impact investors more powerfully while having limited impact on first home buyers. And they also noted that the DTI limit would be a complementary tool to mortgage loan-to-value ratio limits, LVRs, as they address different dimensions of housing-related risks. DTIs reduce the likelihood of mortgage defaults, while LVRs largely reduce losses to banks if borrowers default. In his response, the Minister has agreed in principle to add debt serviceability restrictions to the MOU, but only on the condition that any implementation is designed to avoid impact as much as possible to first home buyers. So they have to work with the Treasury to update the wording of the MOU, which will then need to be approved by the Minister. Although we do not have a remit to target house prices directly, our financial policy tools can help to ensure prices do not deviate too far from sustainable levels, Reserve Bank Governor Adrian Orr said. We believe that a sustainable house price is the level that the price would be expected to move towards over several years, reflecting the underlying drivers of supply and demand for housing, including population growth, building costs, land supply, and interest rates. No, nothing there specifically about credit availability. Big black mark, in my view. Over the coming months, the Reserve Bank will also be discussing with industry the feasibility of implementing a DTI limit and other debt servicing restrictions as part of our financial stability toolkit. Any decision on implementing debt serviceability restrictions will be preceded by a full public consultation process, along with a regulatory impact assessment. But while Finance Minister Grant Robertson may have finally agreed in principle to the Reserve Bank adding debt serviceability restrictions to its macroprudential toolkit, the tool that is initially available is one proposed by banks as an alternative to the regulator's favoured tool. The Reserve Bank had wanted a tool restricting residential mortgage borrowers' debt-to-income ratios for at least 5 years. However, firstly, the National Government and now the Labour Government have been reluctant to acquiesce to the Reserve Bank having the tool due to it potentially stopping significant numbers of would-be first home buyers buying a house. In fact, Robertson last week said that he'd agreed to debt serviceability restrictions being added to the Reserve Bank macroprudential toolkit, but it's only if they don't impact first home buyers. And the development and design of a debt serviceability tool, such as a DTI ratio limit, should apply only to investors. Now, there's some history here. Back in 2016, the Reserve Bank in New Zealand asked the then Finance Minister, Bill English, for a DTI tool. That came after a memorandum of understanding signed by English and the Reserve Bank New Zealand Governor then, Graham Wheeler, back in 2013, which included four macroprudential tools, but not a DTI tool. The idea of macroprudential tools, such as restrictions on high loan-to-value ratios, the LVRs, is that the Reserve Bank of New Zealand can introduce them on banks to dampen excessive growth in credit and asset prices and strengthen the financial system. But LVRs, of course, protect the banks, not borrowers. DTI limits are usually calculated as a ratio of total debt to gross income. From a financial stability perspective, the Reserve Bank says a key benefit of DTI restrictions is that they link credit availability to income growth and can be effective through an economic cycle. By contrast, since LVRs of existing property automatically fall as house prices rise, LVR restrictions become less binding over time in a rising housing market, says the Reserve Bank. Now, in 2017, the Reserve Bank publicly consulted on a DTI tool and undertook cost-benefit analysis. That was required by Stephen Joyce, who had succeeded English as Finance Minister and effectively kicked the issue into touch until after that year's election. Now, it should be noted, they said, that while debt serviceability restrictions and other macroprudential tools can be of some assistance in supporting the government's housing policy objectives, the fundamental drivers of house prices and housing affordability, for example, population growth, land use constraints, infrastructure, building costs, and long-term trends in global interest rates, fall outside our remit and require a broader public policy response, the Reserve Bank said. Now, of course, once again, they are missing the elephant in the room, credit availability, which is, I think, their responsibility. Even with Robertson's in-principle agreement now, the addition of any new tools to the Reserve Bank of New Zealand's macroprudential toolkit won't happen this year, probably. Amongst last week's information flow, the regulator said that it was formally requesting Robertson agree to add debt serviceability restrictions to the MOU, with Treasury to also be involved in the process, and then it plans to consult again. For DTI limits, we estimate that a lead time of 6 months or more will be needed to consult on design and calibration and for industry to implement the necessary systems, they said. This timeline would need to be discussed further with the industry, particularly since banks are currently upgrading their systems to comply with Credit Contract and Consumer Finance Act Responsible Lending Code requirements that come into force in October. And the bank went on to say that if it needed to take action more quickly, they could turn to an interest rate floor potentially, which could be implemented within 2 to 3 months. And that would involve setting floors on the test interest rates that banks use when assessing borrowers' serviceability. The bank says that the floor can be specified in absolute terms or be set as a margin above commercial lending rates. That's an alternative to a DTI ratio tool, which was suggested by bank lobby groups, including the New Zealand Bankers Association, in its response to the 2017 consultation. They argued the evidence linking high DTI loans and loan defaults was weak, with job loss having the most significant impact on the likelihood of loan default, which is very convenient. With the actual rate decided by the Reserve Bank, all banks would apply a serviceability interest rate to their affordability assessment calculation as a minimum affordability measure for borrowers. Now, of course, individual banks already build in a debt serviceability buffer at an interest rate higher than current mortgage rates to get a feel for what repayment borrowers could afford if interest rates were to rise. And the Reserve Bank says that there are a range of debt serviceability tools in use internationally, including DTI limits. Additionally, there are loan-to-income LTI limits, which are similar to DTI limits, but with reference to a specific loan rather than the total debt. And I believe, actually, that total debt is by far the better test rather than individual loans, not least because people can have multiple loans. And there are also debt servicing to income, the DSTI limits, which sets a cap on the percentage of a borrower's income that can be allocated to servicing debt repayments. And they said, we consider that DTI limits have some advantages over other debt servicing tools, particularly in moderating house price cycles and dampening investor demand. However, when we consulted on debt serviceability restrictions in 2017, the majority of the industry expressed the preference for a floor on test interest rates on the basis that it would be easier to implement within their current systems of assessing debt servicing. The bulk of our analysis and modelling to date has focused on DTI limits, they said. The two tools are not necessarily mutually exclusive. For example, interest rate floor could be put in place in the short term while DTI limits are designed and consulted on for implementation at a later stage, they said. An initial high-level assessment of interest rate floors was undertaken by the bank. And they want debt serviceability restrictions to be specified in the MOU in general terms. This, it says, would allow flexibility to design, calibrate, and adjust the tools as required to maximise their effectiveness in meeting both the Reserve Bank New Zealand's mandate and the government's housing policy objectives. But with Robertson reluctant to see DTI restrictions imposed on first home buyers, the Reserve Bank appears to have tailored a tool to meet that requirement. Our analysis suggests that in the current market, a DTI cap of 7 would have minimal impact on first home buyers while deferring some purchases by investors. A lower DTI cap of 6 would be expected to have more impact on moderating house prices and dampening investor demand, but would also have higher allocative efficiency costs and could prevent a small number of first home buyers from entering the market, the bank says. In fact, in the past, the Reserve Bank described a DTI of 5 as high, and 5 is one that's quite often used, for example, in the UK. And there was another idea floated, differentiating the caps by borrower groups, as is the case with the existing LVR restrictions. For example, the DTI cap could be set at 7 for owner-occupiers and 6 for investors. DTI caps could also be combined with a speed limit, which could be differentiated by borrower groups, allowing banks to allocate credit to those they judge as better high DTI borrowers. That's in line with the UK. These detailed design questions would need to be consulted further and consulted on if we were to proceed with implementing DTI limits. And the bank also emphasises the point that if debt serviceability restrictions are added to the MOU, it won't necessarily be implementing them straight away. Any decision would need to be informed by our assessment of financial stability risks and house price sustainability, taking into account the impact of recent policy changes on the housing market. However, we will begin engagement with industry immediately to make sure banks are well positioned if we do decide to proceed. In 2017, we estimated that after allowing for the likelihood that some constrained borrowers would be replaced by low DTI buyers, house sales could fall by around 9% following the introduction of DTI restrictions at a cap of more than 5%, which in turn could reduce house prices and credit growth by 2% to 5%, they said. Since the 2017 consultation, house prices have continued to rise faster than incomes and DTI ratios have become more stretched. Therefore, DTI restrictions at the same level, around 5%, would have a stronger effect on credit growth and house prices. We estimate that using a DTI cap of 6 would now be roughly equivalent in terms of the amount of lending constrained as a DTI cap of 5 in 2017. The impact of DTI restrictions is likely to be sustained over time to a greater degree than LVR restrictions. This is arguably well aligned with the objectives of house price sustainability, the bank said. And so, meantime, the Reserve Bank may turn to tweaking the floors on the test interest rate that banks use when assessing borrower serviceability. And the Reserve Bank says the floor can be specified in absolute terms or be set as a margin above commercial lending rates. With the actual rate decided by the Reserve Bank, all banks could apply a serviceability interest rate to their affordability assessment calculation as a minimum affordability measure for borrowers. And the Reserve Bank published this chart in its financial stability report in May. Test rates have come down over recent years. In December 2019, ANZ was at 6.65%, and in September 2018, banks were at about 7.75%. But what we see from both these stories is the wicked combination of politics and regulatory control, which is pulling in two directions at the same time. It's true over there, and it's true in Australia too. Point is that politics says we have to try and get people into the market, particularly first home buyers, and get more credit out there, never mind some of the other issues, whilst the regulators are perhaps a little bit more twitchy in New Zealand than in Australia. But of course, the big question is how much more credit will be thrown through the system to drive the economy harder, because that's the only game in town and nobody wants to break that mould. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious markets, you do not need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying property is both challenging and adversarial, and the vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find. And then, of course, there is the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email on info@ribbonproperty.com.au, and if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.